Develop with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the 49th episode of Robots. Today we look at robotic software platforms with Jean-Christophe Bailly, who is the leader of the company called Ghostai. He tells us about the software Urbi that he created to help developers program and control robots, and his motivation to go open source at the International Conference on Robotics and Automation in a couple of weeks.
Adam and I will actually be in Alaska for this conference, so expect some fun reports from one of the leading conferences in robotics in the world. But first, as always, let's hear the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. German carmaker Audi, now part of the Volkswagen Group, and U.S. University Stanford are creating an autonomous rally car. Building on their previous success with Junior and Stanley at the DARPA Challenges in 2005 and 2007, the engineering teams now focus on higher speeds, up to 210 kilometers per hour or 130 miles per hour. Their new robot car, Shelly, is an all-wheel drive 2010 Audi TTS. Their new track is the famous Pikes Peak International Hill Climb close to Colorado in the Rocky Mountains, which covers a distance of 20 kilometers over 156 turns, climbing 1,500 meters on grades averaging 7% over both gravel and paved roads. Their new goal is having a car drive itself right at the very limits of its performance to ultimately design a system that can assist even the best drivers. While NASA's Mars rover Spirit has had to surrender to being stuck in its sand trap, its sibling continues to use every opportunity to search for and investigate new locations. Its unexpected longevity, coupled with the severe time and bandwidth constraints of communication with Mars, has now led NASA to use opportunity for real Martian test drives of advances made in more autonomous robot behavior. A new system called Autonomous Exploration for Gathering Increased Science, or AEGIS, allows the rover to automatically analyze images from its panoramic camera, select targets of interest, and then take multiple narrow-angle images through color filters. Deployment of this new software follows previous updates to increase opportunities' capabilities to take intelligent decisions and continues a general trend towards more autonomy for robot rovers. Some of you may remember Professor Hiroshi Ishiguro, who has built his own robotic doppelganger from an earlier interview with the Robots podcast. Ishiguro has now just unveiled his latest creation, a female android called Geminoid F. Similar to Ishiguro's earlier creations, Geminoid F looks ultra-realistic and is remote-controlled to produce a wide repertoire of expressions. At the press conference, the robot was also shown mimicking the facial expressions of a woman sitting in front of a video camera. Geminoid F is also remarkable for numerous technical improvements over Ishiguro's earlier robots. For example, it requires less than a quarter of the actuators of previous models and incorporates all of its air server valves and their control systems into the robot's body. One of the most important improvements, however, concerns the Geminoid's look. In particular, her smile. Ishiguro's team worked hard to give the robot a convincing, toothy smile. Have a look at one of the videos and judge for yourself. For videos of the current autonomous Audi TTS prototype, details on NASA's new autonomous exploration system AEGIS, and videos of Ishiguro's Geminoid F, have a look at the robots forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Jean-Christophe Bailly received his PhD in artificial intelligence from the University of Paris 6 and Sony Computer Science Lab, and then founded the Cognitive Robotics Lab in ENSTA Paris Tech. He'll be telling us about his past work on developmental robotics and how it somehow led to the design of Erbi, a tool to control complex robotic systems like the AIBO. In 2006, he founded GhostEye to further develop the Erbi technology, which has now been extended to many robotic platforms, such as the now humanoid used for RoboCup. He'll be telling us about his plans to go open source, his business model, and what it's like to compete with Microsoft.
Hi, Jean-Christophe. Welcome to Robots.
Hi.
Can you present yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, well, I'm Jean-Christophe Bailly. I'm the founder of a company called GhostEye, which is specialized in software for robotics, home robotics, or even industrial robotics. And I have an academic background. I did a PhD at SUNY Computer Science Lab and the University of Paris 6, after which I joined a lab in ENSTA, which is another university in Paris, where I worked on developmental robotics and where I designed Erbi, which is the core technology that is the base for what we do at GhostEye. And I created GhostEye about 3.5 years now, 4 years, let's say, in March, to further develop Erbi and try to work in this consumer robotics market that is growing at the moment.
More generally, what is the mission of GhostEye, your company?
So the mission is perhaps best summarized by the company motto, which is robotics for everyone. So the idea is to help promote robotics towards something that's going to be used by a lot of people, that's going to change the life of many people in their everyday life, for entertainment, for elderly care, for security, surveillance. There are many, many uses, and we belong to these people who think that, with careful comparison, but there is similarities between this industry and the computer industry, and that this is going to be something really important, and we want to contribute to this through the software side by bringing application and also operating system to this industry.
Erbi, one of your products, is basically the product of your research from before, so I wanted to start by that. Generally, what type of robotics research were you doing then?
So you mean my previous research in robotics?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the main domain I was interested in robotics is developmental robotics. So I was interested in this domain because it's drawing inspiration from cognitive psychology and trying to understand how the robot can build knowledge, behaviors through an interaction with its environment and through the interaction also with other robots or caregiver. So in kind of an interesting triadic interaction between the robot, his perception, his actions, and the environment around him, including some other robots, so including some social dimension. So this is a loose definition, if you want, a general introduction to what is called developmental robotics, where basically we try to understand how the knowledge of the robot is built up by interaction with an environment and other robots. We're trying to understand what happens basically in an infant in the early years that helps this enable this infant to build in a very short time this very large amount of knowledge that is fine-tuned to the environment.
I guess this fits the talking head experiments that you did at Sony. Can you maybe briefly explain these?
Yeah. I didn't exactly do the talking head experiment at Sony. I contributed to the extension of this experiment, which was done at that time by Luke Stills, on certain aspects of grammar. I'm going to explain that. So I contributed to the visual processing part. But afterwards, when I joined the NSTA, I also, in fact, contributed to another experiment, which I called the talking robots, involving two AIBO robots interacting. And so the idea behind those experiments, either the talking heads or the talking robot, is to have two agents, in fact, two robots or two cameras, interacting together in front of a scene and looking at this scene and exchanging with each other to dynamically build a language. The language could be as simple as a lexicon, to have common words to designate some visual elements like size or color or positioning in space. But it can go also to more sophisticated language constructions like grammar. And in that case, you need to be able to perceive more movements, more actions in the video sequence, in the image coming to the robot. This is where I contributed at Sony. And also, it's important to have an environment that is rich, where you can have a lot of perceptions, and where you can have also interactions. And this is one of the things we have been looking at in the talking robot experiment.
And were these robots finally able to figure out a language?
Yeah, well, that's I think personally this is one of the most interesting directions for AI. The idea is that by interacting together, the robots are building first a lexicon, so pointing to images, to part of the image, they will create a new word to designate something that is relevant to identify this part of the image. For example, the fact that it has a specific color that is unique. And this will be then guessed by the other agent or the other robot based on the part of the image that is the most salient or the most interesting. And if they come to an agreement, if they point to the same object in the image with a quotation around the word object, it's not really well defined, then they will enhance if they have used the same word, they will reinforce the link between this feature, for example, the color, and the word. Otherwise, the link will be decreased. And gradually, by interaction, after many iterations, then you will have a convergence, the system will converge towards a shared lexicon of words that will be defining a way to use symbols, in that case, words, to relate to perception. So in that case, color or shape or size or things like that. So this is very important, I think, because it bridges the gap between the world of symbols. So I would say the classical world of AI, the one from the 70s, that is manipulating symbols and processing rules and symbolic information. And on the other side, the perception issue. So how do you bridge the two? This is a very larger issue. It's called the symbol grounding problem. And the approach of the talking at experiment is one way of solving this issue that I think is very promising because it's iterative and it's tightly coupled to the environment and it involves different agents interacting together. In what is called a language game. So it has all the good properties of what I defined before in developmental robotics.
Going back to Gostai, what make you realize that there was a need to develop new software for robots or Urbi?
Oh, that's very simple. I started using the AIBO robot, and this robot is a fairly complicated program using the C++ interface by Sony. So I spent several days and more importantly, my students spent several days just to move a motor, understand the complex C++ architecture that is behind the what is called the OpenR SDK. So the first motivation for Urbi was to make this much simpler and have a simpler interface where you can just basically name a motor and use that name to move it and control the camera in the same way, etc. So the motivation for Urbi at the beginning was to simplify the access to the AIBO robot. Later on, I added more and more functionalities that were relevant because we needed them. So it was driven by what we needed. For example, the fact that you have to be able to handle parallel commands, the fact that you have to be able to handle events very easily, and many other features that are now part of what makes Urbi special. They all were driven by the need, basically, that arose by the fact that we were using this robot every day in AI experiments. And then later on, I extended Herbie so that it could be used with other robots, and it became the tool that I think is valuable for other roboticists and manufacturers also, into controlling any robot, but in a simple way, and with features that are useful when you program robots, which is quite different from programming computers.
So just to make things clear, Herbie is a can you maybe say what it can do? So you basically have code and you can compile this code and you can put it on the robot? I mean, compared to a simulator for someone who doesn't know this.
Yeah, well, perhaps let me just give a very, very short description of what is Herbie, because this is not always very clear, you're right. So Herbie, before all, it's a middleware, which is in C++, that allows you to build objects. We call them U-objects. That are interconnected to each other and which represent functions like speech recognition, face detection, object recognition, if you can do that. And you are going to connect this object together. So this is a very, very usual middleware approach that you find in many other systems that are comparable. On top of that, we also have the Herbie script language. So we just gave it another name, so it's clearer that it's not, Herbie is not just a language. Herbie is before all the middleware. And you have the Herbie script language that is that can be used to orchestrate, to coordinate the different objects together and make them exchange information or start some actions when some conditions are met or do several things in parallel, etc. So the script language, the Herbie script language, is taking care of the orchestration, is taking care of the processing of parallel things, the processing of events, and this is the kind of division of work that you find in modern computer games, where you have a script language, typically EDUA, for example, that is used to script the game logic or the game behavior. And of course, you have C++ for all the heavy tasks, processing image, pathfinding, etc. So this division of the task that you have to do when you are programming a robot, we just took the same idea in Herbie, but the script language itself has some capabilities to handle parallelism and event-based programming. So this is new, and this gives you an overview of what is Herbie.
So you said you had interfaced Herbie with different types of robots. Can you maybe give us a short list?
Oh, okay. So there is a robots that you can actually buy now and which have Herbie inside, like the Now from Aldebaran Robotics. You also have, of course, the Aibo. You also have Lego Mindstorm, Bioloid. Also the iRobot Create. These robots, you can download Herbie from our website and put it inside your robot. So they are not natively equipped with it, but you can download it for free and use it. I forgot also the Spiky robot, a fairly recent one, that we have added to the list. So it makes all these robots compatible. There's also more research robots that we have done one version of Herbie at one time, but which is not supported anymore, like the EPUC or the HRP2. What else? Well, there's a list on the website, but which is interesting is that it's a large number of robots, and it's a very different types of robots. It's different types of robots that are supported. So it goes from the EPUC, which is a very small one, or the HRP2, which is a human-sized humanoid. And it shows how you can have the same system controlling very, very different types of robots.
So what I'm wondering is, with so many different types of robots, how do you actually make a one-size-fits-all software?
Okay. This, of course, is a natural question. And, of course, there is no magic. There's no such thing that, will magically transform your program that is designed for a humanoid robot and make it work with a wheeled robot, or if your program is using hand manipulation and you don't have an hand, it's not going to work, of course. So the way we approach the issue is by standardization. You have several layers of standards with each time a higher level of abstraction. And on the lower level, you have the fact that Well, it's the same system called Erbi that can control all these robots. So you have the same technology. This is the first layer. It doesn't bring enough, of course, to make full compatibility. The second layer is that you can add control for different motors or camera or sensors in general by adding objects, what I just named before, the U objects. So these U objects are just a C++ class that you can plug inside the Erbi script to make this class visible from within the script language. And if you decide to use one of those class to connect to the underlying API of the robot to control a motor or camera, then that's it. You have an access to this camera through an object. So when you are at that level, you need to simply specify that you have a common way of naming things. So a camera is called a camera. The left arm motor from the shoulder would be called a shoulder L, like left. So, well, these are just conventions. They are highly debatable. It's not the point, but the point is that we have proposed these conventions and we follow them. So you can, just by looking at the robot and its morphology, you can already guess the name of the different sensors according to their positions, according to their obvious meaning. If you have an arm, if you have a leg, these kind of things. Of course, you can always imagine a robot that has no shape or very strange. In that case, we have fallback in the standard that helps you name things anyway. But the most common robots will pose no problem in terms of naming things. So that's another layer. And then the most high-level layer, the last one, is that we specify a standard API for typical functions that you need. So if you need to move forward, you will have a function that specifies robot.go that goes that takes a one number, which is a distance in meters. And using this, you can control the movement of your robot. And you don't care if it's legged or if it is using wheels or whatever. It could be as well, I don't know, fly perhaps. And it doesn't matter. This is, of course, something that has to be implemented. And that's what we do when we make the robot Erbi compliant. So we certify that at every level, you have a compliant implementation. And then you can, of course, use the higher level functions to define your behaviors, to define your programs. And you have a good chance that it's going to work with any type of robots that are compatible with the functionalities you request. If it's not a mobile robot, of course, you cannot move it, and then it's not going to work. But you can detect that. You can see that there is no movement capabilities, and perhaps issue an error or something.
Why did you design a new language for Erbi?
Oh, well, you could first say that you don't need a new language because you can do everything in C++. You can, of course, do everything in C if you want. And so it can go very, very deep like that. I mean, you need something new when you realize that you are using certain types of construct, certain types of abstractions all the time. And you are forced to develop layers on top of your tool to be able to handle those things. And the vision is to say, when that happens, it's perhaps interesting to embed these abstractions directly inside the language. So that's what happened a long time ago with C++ and C. People were building in C abstractions to represent what is an object, and you can do that very well in C. But after a while, it became clear that adding this abstraction inside the language, so building something like C++, was a real benefit because you suddenly materialize the abstraction you're working with, and that brings a lot of advantage in terms of checking, in terms of easiness of reuse of code. Well, this is the story of C++ and C. Now, about Erbi script, the same story, I think, applies, but relating to parallelism and event-based programming. So if you want to do parallelism today, well, of course you can. Nobody waited for us for doing such a thing, but it's usually complicated. You need to use a thread programming or other types of ways to more or less manually control your parallelism. And so UrbiScript is a language that embeds all this abstraction inside its own semantics and propose these abstractions inside the language. That makes a whole difference. To be very precise, let's give an example. If you want to execute a code A and a code B, if you want to execute one after the other in UrbiScript, you would do A, semicolon B, and that would be A, then B. But if you want to run both A and B running in parallel and start at the same time, you would just write A, ampersand, B, and that's it. So and A and B can be as complicated as you want. If you want to catch an event, let's say, for example, you want to do something when X equals 2, you will write something like at 80. So at X equal 2, and then your code describing what you want to do. And this is going to detach in the background. So in a sense, it's going to run in parallel. And it's going to execute your code as soon as X equals 2. So you have, of course, this, you can do this in C++ or in other script languages, but you have to do it by hand. By putting it inside the language, you get more power, you get more abstractions that you can manipulate at high level, and your code is easier to read. Well, there's a lot of benefits that come from that.
I saw that you Urbilized WebBots, which is a robotic simulator that we use here as well. What does that mean?
Okay, the term is Urbify, I think. Well, that's what we use at GhostDive. And so in the case of WebBots, it simply means that if you have a real robot, which also is available in WebBots, then you can use Urbi transparently to program the simulated robot, for example, and then switch to the real robot. The only thing that's going to change is the IP address of your Urbi engine, which is the central part that is running Urbi. And you just change that, usually from localhost, where your simulator is running, to the IP of the actual robot, and it's going to work. Of course, there are some limits to that. The simulation is not perfect. There are some limits, everybody knows. But more or less, the promise is, as much as you can do with a simulator, this is going to work from the standpoint of the programmer, because you don't have to recode anything, you don't have to change any line, and it's going to work transparently.
You're going open source this spring, I think. That's really great. Why do you want to go open source?
So the reason for going open source comes from an observation that first, universities, that is one of the people we're talking to, are very reluctant to use closed source code, and I know that. I was a researcher, so I understand perfectly why. So this was something we had to do if we wanted to contribute more to research by providing Urbi for a research project. So that's one thing. The other thing is more a business analysis, which says that today the trend is clearly set on open source operating systems. So Urbi is a middleware. Sometimes I say it's an operating system. Well, the idea is that it controls everything in your robot. And most manufacturers are not very comfortable with the idea of having that into the end of a proprietary code. Means that if the company goes down, they will be left without any support. And also that they depend, even if the company is not down, they depend strongly on this company. Well, this is the story of Microsoft and Dell, for example. So this I think this time is probably over because the industry has learned from history. I might be wrong, but that's what we observe today in cell phones, for example, with Android, which is open source. And at the beginning, we didn't put Urbi in open source because we wanted to move carefully. And, you know, it's a process that you cannot reverse once you've gone open source. So we wanted to go carefully and start with a closed source and see how the market was reacting. And the reaction was exactly, as I said, people were careful and not very comfortable with this. So now we took time also to prepare the source for an open source release. We also waited for the version 2 of Urbi to be out, which is imminent now. So the situation now is okay. We have all the elements we needed, and so we can go to an open source model. And this is going to make the life we have with manufacturers easier, because they are going to be reassured, because, well, they don't necessarily have to pay anything. They can pay support, they can pay optional modules that we can sell, but they don't really need to, so that's going to make the first step much easier. And with university, of course, it's going to make make the corporations much easier also. So I think globally the feedback will be positive, and this is going to happen in May during the ICRA conference in Alaska, and we will see how the direction is.
Do you hope the community will contribute?
Oh yeah, that's another benefit of going open source. Yes, we can hope that the community will contribute. The only constraint we will put on that is that we will ask the contributors to sign a paper that says that they give us the right to use their code into other types of release but GPL. So, of course, they keep the proprietary rights, their code belongs to them, but they give GovStack the option to go into what is called a dual licensing model. So if, for example, a manufacturer is really not happy with GPL, because we are going to use a GPL-compatible license, I should have said that at first. So if a robot manufacturer or an industrial partner, I don't know, is not satisfied with the GPL, we have the option to say to this partner, okay, we can create for you a commercial license, which is not a GPL, because we are the copyright holder, so we have this option to issue as many licenses as we like. There's one on the table, which is the GPL, but if you don't like it, we can make another for you. And this freedom to be able to relicense our code, we will need to preserve it, so we can have the option to do this dual license business model. Even if I'm not sure this is going to be a real actual business case, I want to leave the option open for the moment.
If everything is open source and free, even for the companies, what's the business model? I mean, how are you going to end up making money?
So the business model can be either through the double license model that I explained, where you can have people who are not satisfied with the open source license and want to have a commercial license that frees them from every constraint that could come with the open source license. So this is one model. The other model also is that we will work on a pro version, so a version of Verbi with enhanced features that are specifically targeted to industrial companies. And this version will not be open source. It will have some features that are relevant for big companies, like interface with some exotic operating system or interface with some standards that are using in a specific domain. And so it will not impact the quality of the open source version. The open source versions will not be a downgraded version, but it will also bring value, certain type of value, to certain type of customers who are willing to pay for it. So this is for Herbie. And of course, as I said, there's also all the application layer where we are working very intensely now, which is not open source, where we can also have a business model for selling applications. Selling applications in very, very different ways. It could be directly selling to the consumer. It could be selling to the robot manufacturers, or it could be selling through distributors that are in between the customer and the robot manufacturers. So, these are the options that we are looking at the moment.
What are the main challenges in launching a software business in robotics?
Well, I think the main challenge is that when you talk to talented developers and roboticists, you have this not invented here effect that is predominant. So people are usually quite reluctant to use somebody else's work, somebody else's code, I mean. So you always have to demonstrate that you are really bringing a serious amount of value. And I think When you go into software for robotics and you want to do a universal platform, you can have two types of values. The first is that everybody is using your software. So, well, you're a standout. And there's no such thing at the moment. There's Microsoft who did something interesting. They're also player stage. But it's not really a standout. If you pick the five top popular robots, you cannot find a perfect match. Well, one of these, including Herbie, one of these platform is supported on the top five robots. So perhaps it's not really happening yet. The other thing that you can bring on the table when you do a universal platform for robots is innovation. So bringing some new ways of doing things that help gaining time or making life easier or debugging easier. And so this is, I think, what we claim to bring with Herbie. And if somebody wants to go into this business, it has to either be extremely popular, but that's not something you can have from the start, or bring something really new and innovative on the table. The other thing that you can do in software is, of course, applications. And that's the stage where we are in at the moment at Costai, building applications on top of Herbie, of course, for us, but it could be with something else, and providing some real use for robots by providing practical use case and applications that work.
You spoke of Microsoft before. What will be the impact of a company like Microsoft entering the market?
The first message is that if Microsoft goes onto a market, then there's something interesting to look at. So this has, of course, a very positive feedback on the industry. The other positive thing is that Microsoft has a very powerful brand, so it attracts a lot of attention. So it helps, to create the awareness that there are such things as a universal platform for robots. And globally, I think some people who didn't even think about looking at that were going, straight on rebuilding their own low-level or mid-level programming interface. Suddenly were aware that some people are working on this topic and there was something to look at. So that's one of the feedbacks. And right now we're waiting to see what's going to be the next step about Microsoft robotics. And there are also other projects that appeared on the market. So it's a very, very dynamic and I would say a quite competitive environment for software, for low-level software in robots.
And finally, how do you see the future of Costai?
There are several things. The first is the open source move, of course. This is going, I hope, to make be more popular, so more people will try it, will use it. The second thing is that we want to move forward towards applications. So the future of Costai is definitely not going to be only in middleware or in the operating system, but also with applications. So if you want to make the completely false comparison, but nevertheless, the comparison with Windows, which is the operating system for computers, then let's say that we are also working on Word and Excel, in a sense. But I think this is a very important next step, and that's where we will bring value to manufacturers and hobbyists and, of course, researchers.
Thanks, Jean-Christophe, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you.
That's all we have for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests and a discussion of today's show, have a look at our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Develop with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.